Okay, some interesting Rashi's for Parshas Re'eh. Getting it out just under the wire, just in time, Erev Shabbos. Then his mind is almost over. Mirz Hashem, next week, Parshas Shoftim, will return to the live in Beis Medrash recorded shiur Mirz Hashem. So let's start, perhaps, with an interesting contemporary message. The Torah describes, this is already in Perek Yud Gimel, the Torah describes what we would call as mimesis, mimesis or midiach, someone who encourages the worship of idol, a pagan culture. This is Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Zayin. Ki yisischa achicha ben yumecha ovincha ovitcha, o yisischekecha reyacha asher kinafshecha. So these are all the types of people, surprisingly, who are close to you, but because of their relationship, they have sway over you. So they'll turn you away, they'll poison you, they'll infect you with paganistic ideology, turn you away. Baseser, they'll speak privately. Baseser lemar, nielcha v'navda, Elohim acharim shelo yadata, ata v'avosecha. So Rashi comments on the word baseser, which stands out, I mean, it's, phonetically, it stands out in the pasuk. Rashi says, baseser dibra kasav behove, shein divri hamesis ela baseser. Typically a person tries to infect pagan theology, tries to, in other cases, gossip or other criminal toxic speech. A little embarrassed is always social convention that acts as a deterrent to public displays of toxic, unhealthy, banned speech. But when it's quiet and unseen and private, it's between two people, people lose their fear. People lose the deterrent. And Rashi actually quotes a pasuk, which is interesting to back it up to show how common it is, a pasuk from Mishlei, which highlights common wisdoms, common truths. V'chein Shlomo homom, omer b'neshev be'erev yom, b'yishon layla v'afela. Now, many of us are familiar with that pasuk in Mishlei Perek Zayin, because it's taken from Kriya Shema Shalmita, which is a very elaborate description of evening, b'neshev, be'erev yom, b'yishon layla v'afela, in darkness, in the middle of the night. Of course, the next couple of psukim in Perek Zayin talk about infidelity and prostitution and the types of crimes which take place under the cover of darkness, under the cover of anonymity. Now, what's interesting is, in many ways, this private umbrella, which shades our identity, provides anonymity, and prompts us to behave in ways, to say things, to do things that we would not otherwise do in public fashion, is no longer purely a product of night. Night and day are more similar than they used to be because of the advent of electricity. But the internet has provided this cloak of anonymity, and that's why the internet is such a multiplier or an intensifier of hatred, speech hatred, bullying, bigotry, and then, of course, not just events and speech crimes against others, but types of activities that we are now afforded through the internet in our private world that were much harder to come by in previous generations because we didn't have that private access. So the life that we lead, Beseser, has become a major, major challenge, particularly of the society we live in and the way we speak about other people and towards other people, the aggressiveness, the violence, the hatred, the bigotry, the manipulation, the bullying, but just in general how we behave, Beseser. So, obviously, the psukim are talking in a specific context about Avodah Zarah, but there's more of a general, natural tendency, part of the human condition. And that's why, again, the pasuk that Rashi quotes from Mishlei Perek Zayin is not particularly about Avodah Zarah. In this case, it's more about the pasuk Perek Zayin, pasuk Yud, after describing the elaborate darkness of night, v'hinei isha likraso shisizona etzira slave. And all of a sudden, a person comes across, in this case, a prostitute, a harlot, and because of the cloak of darkness, he feels more comfortable behaving in a certain way that he would not otherwise behave in the light of day. Turning our attention back to the previous parak, which warns us against the pagan cultures we'll encounter, I'll talk a little bit about this later, the cultural backwash. So one culture in particular, one pagan culture in particular, which Moshe warns against is Molech. Lo ta'aseh kein l'Hashem elokecha, Ki kol toavas Hashem. Again, in the beginning of the parasha, this is just a general warning. Abeit abdunis kol mekamos Hashem abdushem esagoyim, to uproot, to eliminate, to erase any trace of Avodah Zarah from the map, from the human map, from the cultural map. But a little bit later, this is towards the end of Perek Yud Beis, there's a specific warning geared towards Molech. Ki kol toavas Hashem asher senei asu le'lohem. They don't just practice paganism, they practice abominable, disgusting, repulsive behavior. Ki gam es b'nehem v'es b'nosehem yisrefu b'esh le'lohem. They practice human sacrifice. They sacrifice their children. Of course, we know this to be the culture of Molech. The Torah doesn't say in this case the word Molech, but it's clear the Torah is referring to the Isser of Molech. Now, the Torah, when it describes this abominable, despicable practice of sacrificing children, sons and daughters, it says the word ki gam espinehem, the espinosehem, yisrefu ba'esh lenehem. Rashi comments that evidently they didn't just burn their children, they didn't just sacrifice their children, but they actually sacrificed their parents. And the word gam, as it always is a riboy, is an inclusionary word to say not only did they sacrifice their children, they sacrificed their parents. Gam l'rabos etzavoseim v'imoseim. People would actually not just sacrifice children, but parents. Now the question is, who cares? Normally, gam is embedded in halachos, and by using the word gam, the Torah learns extra halachos. So, for example, one of the most celebrated drashos about gam is a pasuk in Parshas Korach, which describes, in particular context, the responsibility and the ability of the owner of wheat to separate the truma portions. The Torah writes, "Kein tarimu gamatem." Not only are you the ones who are able and responsible, but particularly able to separate truma, but gamatem, also you. So the Gemara derives the halach of shlichos, that not only are you able to be mafresh truma, but your shliach is, and this, of course, is something which is extrapolated far, far beyond the limited capacity of truma. Shlicho shel adam kimoso b'chalat harakula. But why would I care? In Parshas Devarim, why would the Torah care to broadcast? You know what? These Molech people, not only did they sacrifice their children, they sacrificed their parents. Gam es b'nehem es b'nosem. Not only their children, but their parents. TMI, too much information. Why do I have to drill so down into this Molech culture? Okay, there could be some far-fetched, long-term halachic implication if you want to determine whether a person has committed Molech or hasn't committed Molech, if they sacrificed their parents, but it's clear that the Torah's intention, and Rashi clarifies this, is something else. And that's clarified by the conclusion of Rashi. Rashi quotes, after telling us the word gam, reminds us or informs us that they didn't just burn their children, they burnt their parents. Amr Rabbi Akiva, quotes Rabbi Akiva, Ani resi nachri, I saw a Gentile, shakafso li aviv afnei kalbo viachla, that he would tie his father up in front of his dog viachla. And it's not clear whether he let the dog eat the father or he and the dog ate the father together. But either way, this was not a ritual of Avodah Zarah. So why is Rashi even quoting this? So this is a very strange, strange Rashi. The Torah describes the culture, the Avodah Zarah of Molech, that people would sacrifice their children, they'd burn their children to this Avodah Zarah. Rashi says, based on the word gam, not only their children, but their parents. And to back it up, Rabbi Akiva once saw a man cannibalize his father, or at the very least, feed his father to a dog, at the very least. Evidently, there was something beyond the Molech culture. We think of the Molech culture to demonstrate piety, commitment, devotion to their pagan gods. They took their most precious, precious possession, their child, and they sacrificed it in order to show how dedicated they were to their idols. Maybe, I'm not an expert in ancient pagan worship, maybe it was a way of displacing parenthood, that the god is seen as the parent, and the parent abdicates parental responsibility to demonstrate that he's no longer the parent in between God and the child, or the God and the child, not God, but the God, the pagan deity, whatever. It demonstrated dedication, displaced parenthood, projected parenthood to these gods of paganism, of idolatry. This pasuk, by extending Molech worship, not just towards sacrificing children, but to burning parents and towards cannibalizing human flesh, either by eating the flesh or by feeding flesh to dogs, essentially part of that culture was no respect for human life. And no respect for human life, for the dignity of human life, which is, of course, completely absent from paganism. In monotheism, the one omnipotent God creates a one unique creature similar to him, gifted with the tools and the gifts of Tzelem Elokim. And because of that, we respect the dignity of human beings. We protect the dignity of human beings, the freedom of human beings. That entire orientation is missing from paganism. Human beings are no different than the natural world around them. So in Molech, you had on the one hand bloodlust, dedication to their idols through blood rites, which Judaism rejects, but also human sacrifice in total neglect of the dignity of the human body, and because of that, they were willing to sacrifice their parents, which of course is not a way to displace parenthood, and it's not a way to show dedication. You're not in control of your parents. It's just taking people in your surroundings, in your vicinity, and throwing them on the altar, and cannibalizing flesh. So by extending this whole culture, not just to children, but to parents, and not just to parents, but to cannibalism, Rashi's reminding us that one of the dangers, one of the toxicities of this Molech culture, is not just the theological statement about Avodah Zarah, but the philosophical view of the human body and of the dignity of the human condition. Okay, going back a few psukim, when the Torah describes the mitzvah shechita, ki archiv Hashem lokechas gvolcha kasher diber lach ve'amarta ochla basar ki ta'aveh nafshecha lechol basar palavas nafshecha atuchal basar. Again, famous machlokis, were they even allowed to eat meat, what we would call basar taiva, in the midbar? Were they allowed to eat meat when it wasn't in the context of a korban? Remember, they were so close to the Mishkan, they could have easily just offered a korban any time they wanted to have steak for dinner. So according to one sheet in the Gemara, it's Machlokas Yibikiv Rabbi Shmuel, only now is the Torah permitting them to eat meat outside of the context of a korban. Ki archiv Hashem lokechas gevulcha, so now that you'll be distant from the Mishkan, and you'll want to eat meat, ki ta'aveh nafshecha lechol basar. Not in the context of a ritual or ceremony. Rashi believes that the term ki archiv is not just geographical. You'll be distant from the Mishkan. You won't have the ability to constantly offer a korban. So the Torah is permitting or validating non-ceremonial meat. Rashi says that there's a moral message here. That when you reach economic prosperity, as conveyed metaphorically by ki yarchiv Hashem Elokecha, not just eskivocha, not just expanding borders, but expanding financial condition, then you should eat meat. Rashi's language is limda tara derech eretz. Torah is teaching us not halacha, not even, I would say, patently moral behavior. Moral behavior is interpersonal, ethics, selflessness. It's more how human beings are expected to behave to create a balanced life without the extravagances that can sometimes lead to emotional imbalance, personal instability, and ultimately moral erosion. Derech Eretz is a term that oftentimes is misapplied. First took it to mean something far, far out of its original context. Tarim Derech Eretz, which was meant to be professional opportunities given the Enlightenment or the emancipation of Jews and the welcoming of Jews back into mainstream society. Sometimes people confuse Derech Eretz with morality, with chesed. Derech Eretz means human convention. Hashem created human beings, and there are certain innate ways that Hashem wants those human beings to behave that I wouldn't call them morally, just sleeping at one time, a clean environment, hygiene. These aren't moral issues, though they can affect moral behavior. And of course, it's not just things that Hashem implanted within human beings innately, but conventions that human beings, healthy conventions, not unhealthy conventions, that human societies construct based on the insights and the instincts that Kadosh Baruch Hu planted within the human heart. So one of the elements of Derech Eretz, Rashi says, is Shalois Avadam Lechol Basar, Elamitoch Rachavas Yadayim V'Osher. When you're wealthy, then you should eat meat. When you reach Rachavas Yadayim Ki Archiv. If you're not wealthy, you shouldn't be eating meat, presumably even if you can afford the meat. If you can't afford the meat, then there's other problems. But Rashi's telling us that there's part of human life is that your materialistic engagements should be reflective of your financial condition. And you shouldn't allow your material desires to become asymmetrical or to outpace your own state of affairs. And again, it's not immoral because you'll steal and you'll cheat and it's because it's an imbalanced way to live. There should be an equilibrium. There should be a synchronicity, a symmetry between your means and your desires and acquisitions in a broader sense, not just the meat that you eat. And of course, that's one of the challenges of consumerism, where prosperity is so easily available in our world and financial expenditure is so effortless. And the credit card culture, the internet culture, we always have to check yourselves. Are certain lifestyles and certain upgrades appropriate for where you are, even if you can afford it? Now, it's hard because you never want to judge someone else's comfort level. So you never want to be the person pointing out, well, you see that situation, that's imbalanced, that's inappropriate. Because everyone has their own yardsticks for what they believe they need and what is appropriate for their condition. But sometimes, I guess, the best way to say it is you see younger people sometimes who achieve wealth at a very, very early age, living a type of lifestyle, which, again, isn't immoral. They're not stealing anyone's money, but it just doesn't fit their station in life, their age, their economic station. It has to be a fit between what you spend on and where you are financially, where you are socially. Again, it's very, very hard to nail down, but it is an important lesson. And according to Rashi, it's the lesson of Derech Eretz, which is embedded in this parsha. I apologize if I'm a little tired. It is quite late at night. I want to get these Rashis out. One is the word Baseser, the cloak of darkness, of anonymity, that emboldens people to behave and to speak in ways they wouldn't otherwise. In the case of Parshas Re'eh, it's to be a seditious, treacherous agent of Avodah Zarah. In our day, of course, it's the internet, not the night and the darkness, but the internet. Number two is Rashi expanding Moloch beyond the sacrifice of children to the sacrifice of parents and some form of cannibalism, of devouring human flesh. That Moloch wasn't just a theological error, but it neglected the dignity of the human being by sacrificing human beings. And finally, when the Torah allows us to eat meat, it's only when we reach a state of ki archiv, of financial welfare and comfort. And our expenditures should somehow reflect our financial situation. Shabbat Shalom.